This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Hello, welcome to a special one-off, not a Friday edition of this podcast, reacting to the Oscar winners and losers. And as you probably know, 5 out of 6 predictions ain't bad, but I did get the big one wrong. Now you know what an accumulator is and why you shouldn't bet on it.
Mark Kermode joins me now, who's back at base in London. Mark, good afternoon.
Less of the back at base, I never left.
That's true. Mark, yes. Let me just read some texts that have already come in for you. Mark, Max in Manchester says, tell Kermode he cost me £50 by referring to Avatar as a shoo-in for Best Picture. Thanks a lot, Doc. And Mark in Charmouth says, I hope Kermode has the grace to eat his words. He said they'd reward the big bucks and big bang of Avatar at the Oscars, and he was wrong.
Yeah.
Mark.
Well, completely and utterly wrong. And so two things I'd like to say in this. The first of it is it just demonstrates what I told you all about betting and the reason I don't do it. And secondly, actually, nobody was more pleased than me to be proven wrong about Avatar. I mean, in my defence, 5 out of 6 were right. But Hurt Locker beating Avatar at Best Picture, I really thought was inconceivable. And I'm really pleased that it happened. I know I've heard a couple of negative comments about it. I think it's a great thing. I think the fact is that, very recently Slumdog winning Best Picture, now Hurt Locker winning, means that they seem to be shaping up in terms of their choices. I mean, Hurt Locker is demonstrably a better film than Avatar. And so it did deserve to win. And I think it's really good. And nobody was more surprised than me. Nobody was more wrong than me. Nobody was more pleased to be wrong than I was. Have I flagellated myself sufficiently, or would you like me to carry on?
Well, that's a matter for Max and Mark, isn't it? 85058. Let's see what they have to say about that. In some ways, Mark, I assume it's down to this change in the voting system, which is now quite complex.
Look, I have no idea whether it's down to that. I think in the end, we all end up attempting to explain awards ceremonies by it's this to do with the voting, this to do with the campaigning. I really don't know, because I'm not a member of the American Academy. I'm a member of BAFTA. That's the organisation I understand. But demonstrably, Hurt Locker is a better film. I mean, I'm genuinely surprised, because I really did think that the money was so clearly pointing towards Avatar that there was no way that it could not win Best Picture. If whatever the system has done is allowed it not to win Best Picture and allowed a superior film to win, then I have no problem with it. But obviously what happens when any of these sort of things happen is that in the fallout, people will try and explain it away by saying, well, it's to do with the voting, it's to do with this, it's to do with the campaigning. Actually, it doesn't make any difference. Hurt Locker was a better film. And as I said before, surprised? Yes. Thrilled? Of course.
Yeah, it's gratifying to know that a really rich film, an expensive film, can't simply lobby its way to victory once it's made it onto the nominees list.
Well, frankly, in the past, it appeared that that was the case, that you genuinely could. And however it was that they got to the decision that they got to, it turned out to be the right decision. Yeah. I mean, that's it. Seriously, find me somebody who says that they think that Avatar is a better film than Hurt Locker. It's not. I mean, Avatar has a lot of spectacle in it. I don't think Avatar, incidentally, is total nonsense. The fact that it's Smurfahontas, the fact that it's Dances with Smurfs, the fact that it's 3D and the 3D is completely irrelevant, doesn't make any difference. When you pay your money to see Avatar, you do get 90 minutes worth of wow. Sadly, that's buried within a 2.5-hour movie that has an awful lot of people standing around explaining the plot to each other. But that's what Cameron does now.
It is wow, though. I mean, we have talked about this before, but what you get from Avatar that you don't get with the Hurt Locker is you sit there and at several points you say, oh my God.
You do, and that's perfectly fine, but you don't say, oh my God, because it's 3D. I mean, actually, the one thing I feel particularly pleased about here is heaven knows what the world would be like if a 3D movie just won Best Picture, because as we all know, the industry is attempting to ram 3D down our throats and telling us it's the future. Of course it isn't. It's a gimmick, you know, like anything else.
Can I just interrupt you there?
Well, you go ahead.
It turns out it is the future. Alice in Wonderland has just opened over the weekend, hasn't it? And that's 3D. And apparently I don't have the figures in front of me.
40 million.
It's taken an astonishing amount of money. How much is it?
116 million.
But let me be absolutely clear about this. Alice in Wonderland has not taken that money because it's in 3D. Funnily enough, over the weekend, I paid to see Alice in Wonderland in 2D, having seen it in 3D at a press screening. And it is a better film in 2D. It's a film that is retrofitted.
You are determined to win this argument.
I am. It's a film that is retrofitted into 3D by being filmed against green screen and then being done with CG 3D. It is not the reason the film has done well. I mean, I'm sorry, you can have this argument infinitely, but just because a 3D movie takes money doesn't mean it's 3D. I mean, it just doesn't mean that that's the future. It's like saying a movie with Julian Sands in it can be good. It doesn't mean Julian Sands is good.
I'm just not sure you're right. I think that a lot of people who went to see Alice in Wonderland over the weekend were attracted by the fact that it's in 3D. There's a novelty there.
Yeah, it's novelty. Out of your own mouth, are you condemned? It's a novelty. No. That's exactly it. It's like giving away free lollipops. It's like Odorama. It's like Sensorround. It's like it's a novelty, and it is nothing else. And had Avatar won the Best Picture Oscar, we would now be living in a world in which everybody was able to say, well, look, the future is arrived, and here's the award to prove it. And that, frankly, is the brave new dawn that I was dreading. So as I said before, glad to be wrong.
Look, out of my own mouth, I am not condemned, because if you agree with me that people went to see that film because it's in 3D, novelty or not, it means it's doing well because it's in 3D.
No, the novelty of 3D will wear off. That's the essence of novelty.
But it's working at the moment, Mark.
But it's not. The fact is that people didn't go to see Alice in Wonderland because it was in 3D. There may be a certain number...
Yes, they did. No. I think they did.
OK, well, the simple answer to this is you're wrong and I'm right. And there's really no other way of arguing. It's Alice in Wonderland. It's one of the most enduring tales of all time. It's Tim Burton. It's a kid-friendly movie with a kid-friendly certificate at around the time when we are not... when the only other things fighting for kids' attention in the cinema is Benjamin Snidelgrass and the Cauldron of Penguins. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's not the 3D. It's Alice in Wonderland in the cinema, directed by Tim Burton.
And Chipmunks the Squeakle.
Colin Patterson is here,
our entertainment correspondent. You were saying you had the actual figures. You know the figures. Avatar's first weekend versus Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, Avatar was 77, and John was saying it was
116 is what I saw online.
200 million worldwide so far for Alice in Wonderland.
Well, okay, let me ask anyone else in that group, do you think it took that money because it's 3D, or do you think it took that money because it's a Tim Burton adaptation of one of the oldest and most enduring fairy tales of all time?
Well, let me ask Peter Hammond, movie critic of the LA Times. You haven't got headphones on, but Mark Kermode was saying, do you think it's taken all that money, the $200 million, because it's in 3D or because it's a Tim Burton adaptation of a classic tale?
Well, I think it's a mix. I mean, it's the perfect storm here, you know, for Disney to get all this together. But I do think the 3D theaters, where it's showing in 3D, are far outgrossing the 2D theaters. And by the way, this movie was not even shot in 3D.
Exactly.
It was shot in 2D regular, and they converted it.
They retrofit as well. Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's a mix, Mark. It sounds like we're both right.
No, I'm more right than you are by quite some distance.
All right, let's have a look at some other texts that are coming in. This is from, it's an email actually, from Nuska, who says she sends us a quote from Sandra Bullock's Wikipedia entry, and it reads like this. Mark Kermode said she's made only three good films in her career, Speed, While You Were Sleeping, and Crash, and says she's funny, she's gorgeous, it's impossible not to love her. And yet she makes rotten film after rotten film after rotten film. Has that just changed, Mark?
Well, no. I mean, in the case of The Blind Side, for which she's won, it's a kind of mediocre to good film. She's very good in it. It is her Erin Brockovich. And how fantastic that she won the Razzie and she won the Oscar back-to-back, and that she had the chutzpah to say, I'm going to keep them next to each other because balance is important. I mean, as anyone who is a long-term Sandra Bullock fan will know, and I am. I mean, I interviewed Sandra Bullock before While You Were Sleeping came out, when she had a straight-to-DVD thing called Love Potion Number 9. She's great, but she has made a lot of real stinkers. And if you are a Sandra Bullock fan, it's like being a Richard Gere fan. You get hurt a lot. But how appropriate that she was the person who won the Oscar and the Razzie back-to-back and had the chutzpah to go and get the Razzie and then to wave them both around and say they are both equally important. That's what's good about her.
Yeah, it is what's good about her. And John Wilson is here as head of the Razzies, and we played a clip of her speech at the Razzies at the start of the show. And she was very funny in that speech. I think what also came across, though, is I wouldn't go so far as to say bitter, John, but she doesn't. She went to get it, and she was funny, but she doesn't agree.
I don't think she...
What's it called again? That All About Steve.
All About
she doesn't
Steve.
Think that's a terrible film.
Well, you also have to factor in that she was one of the producers on the film, so she has a lot
so
more
it's her
to defend
fault.
Than if she was a hired bad actress.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, she has a lot to answer for.
Mary, when she turned up, we can't use the word, but she admitted her film was not very good.
That was Catwoman, wasn't it?
Yes.
Didn't she say she'll come back next year if you all actually watch the movie and agree that it's not the worst performance?
Yeah, if she says we will concede that we were wrong, she will come back and return the award. But I have to tell you, giving 300 of our members a DVD of that movie is not going to change the vote.
But can I just ask, am I not right?
We use them as doorstops.
Am I not right?
Mark?
Am I not right in remembering that Paul Verhoeven turned up to accept his Razzie for Showgirls, which, of course, now has become a cult classic?
Did Paul Verhoeven turn up to accept his Razzie for Showgirls?
Yes. Actually, right here at the Roosevelt. We were in the ballroom here that year. He was the first actual winner in the hall when we announced that he won, and he said he was delighted that we enjoyed his film not the way he meant us to, and that sitting through the Razzies was almost as hard as reading reviews when his film had opened.
We were talking earlier about this strange lobbying process that goes on around the Oscars. Is there an equivalent process surrounding the Razzies?
We, in the years when we kept nominating Pia Zadora, we hoped her husband would try to buy us to not give her the award. Actually, we're being lobbied already for next year. This is interesting. Somebody has made a sequel to Showgirls. And as I was heading out the door to our show for our tech rehearsal, I got an email saying, I expect to win a Razzie, blah, blah. And our response to him is going to be, will you send screeners to Razzie members? If you will, and your movie is anything like the trailer I saw online, yeah, we'll consider you.
I guess it's just conceivable there might be a slight spike in sales when you win a Razzie. There are certain people who like watching things ironically out there, aren't there?
Showgirls is one of the great movies. Yeah. It's a great party movie, and, you know, I mean, it is terrible, but it's a lot of fun. I'd rather see that than a lot of so-called good films.
Mark, so many questions for you and so many texts. Let's read some out. Neil in Sunderland says, I know quite a few professional critics who think The Hurt Locker is flawed and overrated, and some of them may well prefer Avatar. To say that one film is demonstrably better than another, as Mark did a few minutes ago, is nonsense. It's a matter of opinion. My personal view is that I narrowly prefer Avatar to Hurt Locker, but regard District 9 as a class above both.
Yeah, I accept other opinions are available. The difference is I'm right and they're wrong.
Do you know what? I actually do. I think you are wrong about 3D. I really...
But do you think I'm right about The Hurt Locker being better than Avatar?
Yes, I do. But okay, well, although I was impressed with Avatar, and it was a ridiculous story and terrible dialogue, but I think I've said to you before, it's a piece of cinematography, it's a cinematic experience, rather. It was very exciting.
Yeah, well, myself, as I said, when I saw Avatar, there was enough in it to go, wow, and that's worth the price. It was certainly a much more enjoyable film than I expected it to be. But it's just like all late-period James Cameron stuff. It is big and baggy and overlong and badly written and woodenly acted.
Here's some questions for you. Does this open, somebody anonymously says, does this open the door for more female directors in the future? A reference to Catherine Bigelow of The Hurt Locker winning Best Director.
Well, I mean, it is astonishing that it's taken this long for a female director to win the Best Director award. I mean, I personally, and I've said this before, I'm kind of really pleased that history has been made by somebody making a movie like The Hurt Locker, which is an incredibly tough movie. In many ways, is a much more macho movie than any male director out there is making at the moment. I mean, I think Catherine Bigelow could have given Sam Peckinpah a run for his money. I mean, and I'm kind of pleased that it was The Hurt Locker that won, and not yet another, you know, as I said before, tale about, you know, female self-annihilation in bonnets. I mean, I think it's really good that she's beaten the boys at her own game. As far as the seeing more female directors, well, of course, all these things will add to it, but it's that in itself is an ongoing process, and it is astonishing that it has taken this long for it to happen. But it's only when these milestones happen that you realise that you say, really, is she really the first woman to win? That never happened before. That is astonishing.
Somebody else on the text says, were you pleased to see Christoph Waltz win Best Supporting Actor for Tarantino's Inglourious?
Well, we knew he was going to. I mean, he was clearly... as I said, out of the six things that I predicted, the one that I got wrong, and I'll say it again, was Avatar, and I was wrong. But obviously, Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress, Best Actor and Actress, and Best Director were pretty much sewn up. We knew Christoph Waltz was going to win Best Supporting Actor. It was pretty much, you know, a clear choice. We knew Monique was going to win Best Supporting Actress. I think Christoph Waltz is very good. The only thing I would say is, for me, the Best Supporting Actor performance that I saw last year was in Me and Orson Welles. Because, Christian Mackay was Orson Welles. I think it was a titanically good performance. I think Christoph Waltz was absolutely great in Inglourious Basterds, was in fact the best thing about that film, an otherwise very baggy and very flawed film. Yeah. But, you know, I think Christian Mackay in Me and Orson Welles really should have been up there.
Yeah, but you're right. He's the best thing in that film, isn't he? That particularly good, tense opening scene that he dominates.
Yeah, he's clearly a great actor.
Dan says, Richard, the Good Doctor is right. 3D is just a novelty that will wear off. A few big films will get a boost from the novelty factor, but that won't last long. It is not the future as long as you have to wear silly glasses. And Anne says, Mark is completely wrong, Richard. Alice in Wonderland is excellent. The 3D added wonder to a classic. Do not let Mark K shout you down. Sarah in Birmingham says, I went to see Alice in Wonderland at the weekend, and I was bored with it. I also saw Everybody's Fine. Everybody's Fine.
Yeah, Robert De Niro going to visit his growing kids around the country at Christmas time because they won't come to visit him. It's a very slow drama, but it did have a song by Paul McCartney that got a Golden Globe nomination, but was just at Oscar time, did not get nominated.
Well, anyway, Sarah in Birmingham says it was excellent.
Well, it's a remake of Stanley Tucci Benny, which it isn't as good as. So,
is it an all right film?
Yeah, but you know, I think all right is the word.
Okay. And Anne in Bury says, I saw Alice in 2D yesterday. Fantastic. Does not need 3D. Guess people assume 3D is somehow automatically better, which is a shame. Mark, let's talk about the Brits last night at the Oscars.
Yeah.
It was a bad night.
But it was a predictably bad night. I mean, again, we said this at the time of the BAFTAs. At the BAFTAs, it was a kind of head-to-head fight between Colin Firth and Andy Serkis. And Colin Firth won at the BAFTAs. And immediately everyone was saying, does this mean he's going to win an Oscar? We all said, no, it means Jeff Bridges is going to win the Oscar because it's his time. Because he's been nominated 5 times. Because this is the time that Jeff Bridges is going to win. And exactly the same thing happened with Kerry Mulligan. Kerry Mulligan was clearly going to win at the BAFTAs. Everybody said, does this mean he's going to win the Oscar? No, because this is the year that Sandra Bullock is going to win. There is a political edge to all of this, which is the Oscars. I think this happens more than at the BAFTAs. There are just historically times when things are going to happen. This was the time that Catherine Bigelow was going to win. It was the time that Jeff Bridges was going to win. In exactly the same way that a few years ago, it was the time that Martin Scorsese was going to win for a film which everybody knows is not Martin Scorsese's best film by quite some distance. So, I mean, it was a disappointment, but no surprise whatsoever.
A rare defeat for Nick Park. He was expected to win, I think.
Yes, and of course, interestingly enough, you know, you're talking about the disappointment before. Funnily enough, going into it, I saw 3 or 4 British Newports who all said, actually, the thing that we've got the most chance of winning will be Nick Park. In fact, I think I heard Colin saying exactly that. Colin is there asking. Oh, I'm pretty sure that I heard Colin say that.
I did, I'm afraid, yeah.
No, well, I understand, because that was what we all thought. We thought, actually, if we have a chance anywhere, that's what it is.
I did say Sandy Pohl as well, to give me some credit. I did manage to call that one as having a chance, but...
Absolutely. To Sandy Pohl, interestingly, correct me if I'm wrong, Colin, in her acceptance speech, did that strange thing of saying that actually the credit for this is due to people who aren't making movies dressing dead monarchs, which was a strange comment to make.
A terrible start to her speech, saying, I've got 2 of these already.
Yes.
That doesn't win the audience round.
We should mention again the film that did win Best Short, Pete Hammond, movie critic at the LA Times. Remind us what that was?
The live-action short? It was...
The animated one.
Oh, the animated. It's called Logorama. It's amazing. It's profane. It's violent. It's about Ronald McDonald. The McDonald's character is walking around with an Uzi shooting up people in LA.
In the clip that I saw during the Oscars last night, it looked great. Mark, have you seen it?
No, I haven't. No, and I have to say it must be pretty good to have won in that category.
Kelly in Devon says, I also want to know why District 9 didn't get a look in. Thought it was a great movie, made on a tight budget, unique style and thought-provoking. Kelly makes a good point there, doesn't she? She says it didn't get a look in. It was nominated for Best Picture, but very soon, all people talked about was The Hurt Locker and Avatar, and Mark. It was as if the other 8 didn't actually exist.
Well, it was, I mean, again, you've sort of touched on this already this afternoon. There was the interesting phenomenon of Oscars taking the Best Picture from 5 to 10, because they were worried, in the wake of Slumdog and all that sort of stuff, they were worried that what happens is, if you get 5 Best Picture contenders that aren't big blockbusters, you're going to lose the audience. They think, okay, the way to solve that is to widen it out to 10 pictures. And then they happened to do it in the year in which the biggest contender was Avatar, which is the biggest money spinner and also seemed like the favourite to win Oscar. So of all the years they could have broadened the field out, this was the year that they didn't need to do it. And this was therefore the year in which things like District 9, they could get nominated, but they were almost immediately left behind. I mean, District 9 was lovely to see it nominated, because frankly it's a better film than Avatar anyway. It does the same things that Avatar does. It has a much more substantial political subtext than Avatar. But it doesn't surprise me that it didn't win anything. It was was one of those things that kind of got in there because they got the new category. So we're going to open it up to 10. But as I said, it was a peculiar year to have done that in, because of all the years, this was the year they didn't need to do it.
Exactly. It just didn't work out for them, did it, Colin? I know you can come in here.
Still no sci-fi film has ever won Best Picture at the Oscars. It's incredible. I mean, we've not had a comedy win since Annie Hall in 1977.
Wasn't it Manhattan? Was it? Oh, it was Annie Hall.
Annie Hall beat Star Wars, yeah.
But then, of course, I mean, that raises the question of whether or not you've ever had a horror win. Because, I mean, people talk about Silence of the Lambs winning Best Picture and whether or not Silence of the Lambs is a horror film. And one of the things that we had in the Oscar ceremony this year, we had this very peculiar montage tribute to the majesty of horror films, which included a clip from Marathon Man, which the last time I looked isn't really a horror film. And it was said, Kristen Stewart said at the beginning, oh, well, ever since The Exorcist won two Oscars. Well, The Exorcist was nominated for 10 Oscars. It was nominated for Best Picture, which it didn't win. And unless you count Silence of the Lambs as a horror movie, which I think is debatable, arguably horror has been overlooked in the Best Film category.
It has. But the interesting thing is, and where this really hasn't worked out for the organisers of the Oscars, is they went from 5 nominees for Best Picture to 10 to make it more populist. In the end, they went from 5 to 2, and a tiny film won. So the whole operation kind of backfired, didn't it, really?
But I don't think it did backfire, because people, I mean, again, as people in the room with you have said, people tuned in because, you know, Avatar has been seen by everybody. In fact, in many ways, this is an ideal situation. A massive movie to make people tune in, but a better movie to win the award. I mean, I know that the ceremony itself wasn't great. I think anyone watching it knows that it wasn't great. You know, the hosting wasn't great. The musical numbers weren't great. That's all true. But they did have Avatar to bring the audience in and The Hurt Locker to win, which was right. And as if that wasn't enough, here's a load of extra stuff. Five Live Breakfast's intrepid red carpet reporter Colin Patterson grabbed Tinseltown's finest by the lapels and got them to talk to him. Here are his best bits.
I've got Stephen Fry right in front of me, who's greeting Kerry Mulligan.
There you are.
Oh, hopefully we'll get...
You should have won, but my God, you look lovely.
Oh,
you were so good.
Thank you.
I hope you were touched by Sandra Bullock. She's the only one who, in her awards acceptance, paid tribute to the other nominees, and I hope you noticed that.
Kerry, do them first and come back to us afterwards. Thank you. We're going to get her on. Stephen Fry. Yeah. People are waking up all over Britain. Tell them what they need to know about this year's Oscars.
Well, people probably have a rather cynical and British kind of view of the Oscar ceremony as being a sentimental waste of time, but I have to say, after many years of watching Oscar ceremonies, this is probably one of the, let me put it this way, least offensive.
Is this because of the host? Well, Steve Martin, Alec Baldwin?
The hosts were very good. And actually, it's really as much as anything because there were very few dud notes. Usually in any Oscar evening, there are about 3 or 4 moments in which you want to vomit with embarrassment. And actually, there were none this
year. I'm thinking
year.
Rob Lowe dancing with Snow White, still the worst ever Oscar moment.
Oh, that kind of thing, exactly. Or just a very sentimental and embarrassing acceptance speech. And generally speaking, this year, I thought there was nothing that made one wish one was elsewhere or wish one was dead.
Who gave the best speech?
I think Sandra Bullock's was one of the very best acceptance speeches I've ever heard. Apart from anything else, it was very, very graceful. I'm sitting next to the wonderful Kerry Mulligan, who was also nominated in the same category for Best Actress. And we were just saying how wonderful, when someone wins an award, the first thing you do is to congratulate the other nominees in your category.
And she went through them one by one.
She did, and it was very impressive.
She didn't thank the Razzie Academy from the Oscar stage, though. You know she won the Razzie.
I know she did. At least she turned up to accept it, which most winners of the Razzie don't. So that, if for people who don't know what the Razzie is the award for the worst film or the worst performance, and she very sportingly turned up to accept that.
And what about the film that won Best Film, The Hurt Locker?
Well, it was very interesting. I was sitting next to Angelica Houston at this dinner that we've been at, and
good name drop.
Yeah, thank you. And we were. She, interestingly, is a member of only 2 families in history that have provided 3 generations of Oscar winners. And you will win special points if you can name the other family. Her grandfather, Walter Houston, won for The Treasure of Sierra Madre. Her father, John Houston, won, of course, as a great director, a couple of times, I think, and she won herself. So three. Do you know the other?
The Douglases?
The Fondas. Is it the Fondas?
The Fondas, as Sheila's guessing in the studio?
No, it wasn't the Fondas. They 2 generations have, but not 3.
This is like a pub quiz.
It's like QI. Anyway,
it's like QI, Sheila's saying.
But Angelica Houston and I were going through all the categories. categories and trying to predict. As you know, I'm sure a lot of people do at home.
Kerry's gone. Kerry, please, live on 5 Live, BBC. Kerry, we've lost
Kerry Mulligan.
What, it's my fault already?
No. You got us a little chat with her. We weren't going to get that. Otherwise, listen, just to wrap up as well, I mean, we were talking about the Hurt Locker there. Avatar didn't do so well, 3.
Yeah, I mean, if you were a tabloid headline writer, you would use the four-letter word that they love to use on such occasions, snub.
You know, the Colin.
Hurt Locker makes Avatar feel blue. That would be mine.
I have to say, hello, Colin. Oh, my dear fellow.
Colin Firth meets Colin Patterson.
Hello. This is a lovely jolly...
Yeah, you deserve to win. We all know that.
The corner that is forever England here.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
It's been rather good, I think, really. It'll be a lot better in a minute when
you've sunk a few drinks.
A bit in a dry state.
What was going through your mind as they were preparing to read out all the names in your category?
In my category?
Yeah.
Oh, Jeff Bridges.
Was it one of those?
I've been at a few of these now. There are no surprises.
Was it one of those where it was just people talking about Jeff Bridges in the run-up and you just thought, well...
Oh, I think you get a fair idea. I mean, I know there are upsets, but I don't think anyone really expected one in my category. But it's my first nomination, so, you know, it doesn't take much to put me on a cloud, really.
We spoke to Tom Ford a little bit earlier. Do you have a special suit on this evening?
It's special in that it is a Tom Ford suit. And it's, you know, we didn't get paid much when we did the film, but... I've cleaned up on the perks afterwards.
And does the label have your name on it?
No. Oh. My name?
Yes.
No.
Oh, that's what
no,
we
I don't
heard.
Have my own fashion range.
Colin, what do you think this nomination will mean to you and your career?
I have absolutely no way of telling you. I don't know, because it's, you know, the whole thing's over today, this season, and life returns to normal tomorrow. It'll be school runs and kitchen chores. And I won't be able to know until that's at least begun.
They came over to you quite a lot. You got quite through cutaways during the ceremony, and you look like you're enjoying yourself.
Oh, really? Well, I'm an actor. No, I was enjoying myself. And actually, it's difficult because at BAFTA, you know when they're on you because there's the camera's right there. I mean, they've got a great big piece of hardware up your snout, and you have to sit there and remain composed. This is full of hidden cameras, and so you're never quite sure when it's safe to, you know, pick your nose.
And Avatar losing out to the Hurt Locker. What do you make of that?
I'm surprised it was so one-sided, but I haven't seen either film, so I can't comment.
Thank you very much, Colin Firth, speaking to us on 5 Live. Well, that was quite a show-busy moment there,
that
with
was...
Stephen Fry introducing us to Kerry Mulligan, back to Stephen Fry, then in came Colin Firth, and then we got a little chat.
And have you lost Stephen Fry now? Because I saw him at a pre-release screening of... a pre-release screening of Alice in Wonderland. He does the voice of the Cheshire Cat, and he is brilliant at it.
It's opening in America this weekend. I think that is why he'd be... Do you know Tom Hanks has just arrived, Sheila?
Can you grab him or not?
Let's see if I can stick a mic and I'm going to
lean
in.
One of my favourites, Tom.
His fights were not nearly as bad as they were going to be. And the interpretive dancers were sensational.
And history was made tonight with Kelly Clemens.
Yes, history was made with Catherine Bigelow. It was fantastic.
And what do you think this will do for other female directors out there? Seeing
without a doubt, I think people are going to be just knocking each other over to work with female directors. I'm going to answer that question.
And Tom Hanks is going to out with my quite long arm reach down the other end. That was Tom Hanks talking about Catherine Bigelow winning Best Director, though. With John Voight, an Oscar winner, Best Actor. And you starred once in Midnight Cowboy, which won Best Picture. Yes. So for the Hurt Locker tonight, how important is it to win Best Picture?
For Hurt Locker, it was a tremendous victory because... I'm seeing Dick Benjamin and some of my friends are...
Arriving at the party.
So we're being interrupted here as we talk, but certainly for Hurt Locker, it was a big event tonight, and it'll mean a lot at the box office in the future for that movie, and I'm very glad for that. And Barry... Aykroyd is a brilliant cinematographer, and he didn't get the award, but the picture got the award, and the picture his work in the picture really has everything to do with its success. So, I mean, when I came out of the picture, I said, "Who is that guy? Who's the cinematographer?" So anyway. There's a lot of congratulations to go around.
And a lot of congratulations to Catherine Bigelow, who's become the first female to win Best Director. It's taken them 82 Oscars. Well, why is it so long?
Well, listen, we can't look backward. We can always only celebrate tonight. This was a tremendous directorial...
Selma Hayek's distracting you there.
Selma Hayek can certainly do that.
She has seriously distracted John Voight. Concentrate, focus, John. Your eyes are going all over the place.
These are my pals, you know. All of these people, I know a little bit of everybody here. So anyway, I'm right in the middle of things, and maybe you should get on to some of these great performers.
Well, we'll let you go then, John Voight. Guy Pearce from The Hurt Locker has actually arrived just beside us. Let me stick the microphone underneath what he's saying.
I didn't really have a proper talk to her about whether she was confident, to be honest. I mean, I think she's just feeling so sort of honoured and excited that the film's done as well as it has, at least up until this point anyway. And obviously she's a friend of James Cameron's, and so, you know, I think they would have both felt, you know, good for each other no matter which way it went. And she's such a humble lady. You know, I don't imagine she would say, yeah, I'm confident, you know.
When you first got involved, could you imagine it would have got this far?
It's hard to say. I mean, I knew it was a great script, and really I was only involved for such a short period of time, so that's not to say that, you know, you would know either way, anyway.
Your character, of course, sort of leaves the film very early on.
Yeah, so I got a bit sick of it, so I was out of there quite quickly. But no, you can never really know or guess, I suppose. I'm always just concentrating on trying to do a good job myself, you know. So, no, I wouldn't have guessed it.
Well, we're going to be seeing a lot more of her. So can you tell us what kind of directing style she has? If you had to sort of personify how she directs her actors?
First and foremost, she's a really lovely person. So she just wants the best out of you. She really wants to be able to communicate that. And, you know, she's a wonderfully honest person. And she's, you know, she's been around the block. She's worked a lot. So she knows how to get the best out of people. She's just a very sensitive person.
Guy Pearce, you're live on BBC Radio 5 Live. I spoke to you at the BAFTAs, and you said there was a bit of competition between Hurt Locker and what you described as the Smurf movie.
The Smurf movie, that's right. Well, I've since seen the Smurf movie, and I have to say, it's pretty impressive. And I shouldn't call it the Smurf movie, really. I was just really referring to those blue people that we all collected when we were kids. But no, it's a pretty remarkable visual feat.
So many Iraq war movies over the last few years, so few have done well. Why do you think Hurt Locker is the one that has come through?
Look, it's really hard to say, to be honest, but I would say it's probably one of the most honest and truthful portrayals. You know, it's not full of bravado, and it's not sort of it's not over the top, and it just kind of gets under the skin of those characters, perhaps more than other films must have done. You know.
And finally, it was one of these films that really battled to get into the cinema. Do you know how close did it come to going straight to DVD rather than becoming out of the cinema and winning Best Picture at the Oscars?
Well, to be honest, I have absolutely no idea, because I wasn't really involved in any of the sort of the distributing discussions or anything like that, so I really don't know. But, you know, when a film's that good, you know, I know that some films that are really great really get lost in the wash, but... But, you know, I think when a film's this good, it's definitely going to be picked up somewhere along the way.
Can I ask whether...
Well, I'll leave that there. Guy Pearce, the star of The Hurt Locker, or one of the... You know, some cameo star.
Nice.
He appears in the first few minutes.
Nice footwork, Patterson. It's not an easy thing to grab an interview in that melee, is it?
Managed to sidle on in there. I'll tell you what, John Voight, he's got an eye for the ladies.
Well, and he also has a great line in polite ways of saying, leave me alone.
Do you know what, Sheila? I think we'll be hearing a bit more of people using that technique over the next 2.5 hours. Oh, my word, this is star-studded at the moment. Zac Efron from High School Musical has just walked through. I'm standing right next to Samuel Jackson. Samuel Jackson, you're live on BBC 5 Live. What was the award you were most excited by? Which one you really cared about tonight?
I guess Best Picture. I was really glad that Hurt Locker won.
You know, why did you really like it so much?
Because I
like
the film a lot. And, you know, it's about real people. It was a happening affair. And, you know, it's a really, really wonderful picture. So I was happy for it.
You've been called a dude a lot, but the dude won Best Actor, Jeff Bridges.
Really?
What did you make of him?
I thought it was a great performance. An award well deserved.
And Sandra Bullock winning Best Actress finally after all these years.
Why do you talk like that? Why do you act like you're surprised by everybody winning those awards? And Sandra Bullock winning for Best Actress. You knew she was going to win. She won every award show she went to. It would have been a surprise had she not won.
I agree, yeah.
Yeah, so don't act surprised.
I'm really excited.
It's like, so it's just like everything that's gone the whole season. Nothing changed.
You think it was a dull Oscar?
Wonderful. No, it was wonderful that she won. It was wonderful that, you know, the string wasn't broken that she carried on. And she also won Worst Actress last night.
So. I was there. It was pretty cool.
So she was very cool about that. So
she turned up.
Yeah.
And gave out DVDs of her movie.
Exactly. So it was a really wonderful thing.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
If that podcast wasn't enough, visit my Uncut blog at www.bbc.co.uk/Mark Kermode for video reviews, anecdotes, and the chance to let me know your opinions.